I'm Om Myoho Renge Kyo, Nam Om Myoho Renge Kyo, Nam Om Myoho Renge Kyo. Hello, friends. I hope this finds you in good health and secure. I'm a little sore, so if you see me doing some weird neck, shoulder motions. Earning my keep here on Ms. Sandra's property. Putting up fencing and, yeah, the old bones are not as loosey-goosey as they used to be. All right, so we're not quite done with this part before the actual parable, but Shakyamuni is now, we've been reading in the last video, explaining how not just he, but through, since the beginning of Tathagata, the cosmos, this teaching of the supreme way versus the three lesser vehicles or semblance karma, dharma, or counterfeit dharma, it's been around. He didn't invent it, is what he's saying in this story. He's saying there are always going to be people of varying capacity. There are always going to be people that need to be nurtured along more than others. There are people who, upon hearing the ultimate teaching, will get it and start practicing it. And there are others that want to understand it, but they've got too many or excessive love attachments for their possessions, including their own bodies, that they can't quite get there. So you have to teach them at different levels, yeah? So that's interesting. At first, he just totally owned for himself that this is what I've had to resort to, not begrudgingly, compassionately, but now you're all raised in decades of this teaching. It's time for you to let go of childish things. So he's been explaining this, and here he's talking about the 12 causes. He's not. Who's talking here? The blah, 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 blah. Yeah, the Brahma kings spoke, and they're talking about the different levels of teaching, right? The Four Noble Truths, the 12 divisions, the 12 causes. And we went through them, the Nidana. And so continuing from there, ignorance annihilated, then action is annihilated. The Four Noble Truths say ceasing. So who knows? These are translations, right? The one thing that's clear is that life is a precipitating causal amalgamation of forms. Through formations from energy, forms, the realm of forms, come about, and they attract and stack on one another until eventually the complexity is such that human beings with sentient minds are born, yes? It's a process that starts from the infinitesimal energies through a process of instantiation, yeah? So, working backwards, if you annihilate ignorance, in other words, learn, educate yourself, then action is annihilated, wrong actions, repercussions, yeah? Action annihilated, then consciousness is annihilated. So if you stop making these causes that influence or just carry along your tendencies, without direct influence from something like, I don't know, Buddhahood, then you're going to continue to think up, to conjure up through samsaric mind these possessions. Once consciousness annihilated, then name and form are annihilated. You see, that consciousness he's talking about isn't all consciousness. It's the eight consciousnesses that conjure from name and form. This is that, that is this. That's identification, remember? Name and form annihilated, then the six entrances are annihilated. The six entrances annihilated, then the contact is annihilated. Contact annihilated, then is then sensation is annihilated. Finally, we've bored down into the skandhas. Sensation annihilated, then desire is annihilated, craving and clinging. Desire annihilated, then clinging is annihilated. Clinging annihilated, then existence is annihilated. And existence annihilated, then birth is annihilated. Birth being annihilated, then are annihilated old age, death, grief, lamentation, suffering, and distress. This is a longer version of what stands behind the Four Noble Truths. All life is suffering. Why? Not because it just is, but because life, as we perceive it samsarically, it's designed to cause us anxiety, stress, suffering, pain, because of the clinging attachments, identification, right? And the process of that identification comes from, just work your way back through this. It's like I said before, it's not that we're flawed or that we're bad beings. Our very existence, it owes to this process of clinging and amalgamation. We wouldn't be here without it. So of course it's our default position. Buddha isn't saying we're bad people or dumb for doing that. It's our nature. But in our sentient mind, there is yet another nature that we never tap into because we're too busy collecting possessions. People, thoughts, ideas, cars, motorcycles, guitars, houses, friends, lovers. It's all identification. And life as human beings goes on this way. But we have another consciousness. And we just don't pay attention to it. Every now and again, I have a feeling. Or something's telling me. Or there's a little voice in my head. Yeah, we know it's there. We just don't develop it. What is it? The ninth consciousness, Buddhahood, the open Buddha eye that isn't affected or influenced by all that possession and identification. It's a completely different way to experience moment to moment life. That's Buddhism. When the Buddha taught this law amidst the universal realms of influence, men and the great host, 600 myriad kodas of nayutas of people, without being subject to all the temporary laws, the conjured ones, the samsaric laws, had their minds freed from faults, all obtaining the profound priori meditations, the three clear views and the six transcendent faculties, and accomplishing the eight emancipations. Those are just a bunch of words referring to awakening that ninth consciousness, opening the eye. Suddenly, everything took a whole different order of being. Likewise, at the second, a third, and a fourth time of teaching the law, thousands of myriads of kodas of nayutas of living beings, numerous as the sands of the Ganges, without being subject to all the temporary laws, those conjured laws, imperatives that samsara would have us believe in, had their minds freed from all faults. From this time forth, the host of his sravakas was immeasurably and boundless beyond expression in numbers. Meanwhile, the 16 royal sons, all being youths, left their home and became shramaneras, of keen natural powers, wise and intelligent. They had already served hundreds of thousands of myriads of kodas of Buddhas, purely practiced Brahma conduct, the highest conduct, the highest moral and ethical conduct, yeah? You can look up Brahma Conduct in Buddhism Reference Volume 2 or Buddhism Reference for definition. And they sought perfect enlightenment. Together, they addressed the Buddha, saying, quote, "World-honored one, all these innumerable thousand myriad kodas of great virtuous sarvakas have already become perfect. World-honored one, teach also to us the law of perfect enlightenment." What do you think he's doing? "And when we have heard it, we will put the lessons into practice. World-honored one, we are longing for the Tathagata's knowledge," the knowledge of life, all life, right? "The thought of our inmost hearts, the Buddha does prove and know." There's that typo again. It's amazing how often this happens. Like me losing my pencil right in front of me. Why is dose in there? That's crazy. "Then amongst the throng whom the revered wheel-rolling king led, eight myriad kodas of people, seeing that the 16 royal sons had gone forth from their home, also sought to leave their homes, whereupon the king permitted them. Then that Buddha, on the entreaty of the Shramaneras, when two myriad kalpas had passed, in the presence of the four groups, taught this great vehicle sutra named the Lotus Dharma Sutra of the Wonderful Law. The law by which bodhisattvas are instructed and which the Buddhas watch over and keep in mind." And keep in mind. Buddhism is about the mind, my friends. And when you reach enlightenment, this law of the wonderful lotus dharma flower is what you keep in mind. Namo Myo Renge Kyoba. Remember the exhortations that if you enter into a compromised social position, to keep Buddha in mind? Same thing over and over again. Same thing. "When he had taught this sutra, the 16 Shramaneras, for the sake of perfect enlightenment, all received, kept, recited, and penetrated it. While this sutra was being taught, the 16 Bodhisattva Shramaneras all received it in resolve, and amongst the host of Shravakas, there were also those who accepted and discerned it." They understood it. "But the other living beings of thousands of myriads, kodas of kinds, all cherish doubts and perplexities," which is why he has to teach stepping stones, Sravaka, Pratika Buddha, so on. "Thereupon the 16 Bodhisattva Shramaneras, knowing that the Buddha had entered the room and was absorbed in meditation, each ascended a law throne and also for 84,000 kalpas extensively taught and expounded to the four groups the Sutra of the Flower of the Wonderful Law. Each of them emancipated 600 myriad kodas of nayutas of living beings, as many as the sands of the Ganges, showing, teaching, benefiting, and gladdening them, and leading them to develop a mind of perfect enlightenment. The Buddha, universal surpassing wisdom, after 84,000 kalpas had passed, arose from his meditation, went up to the law throne, and quietly sat down on it. Universally addressing the great assembly, he said, 'Rare are such bodhisattva shramaneras as these 16, keen in their natural powers and clear in their wisdom, who have paid homage to infinite thousand myriad kodas of Buddhas, constantly practiced Brahma conduct under those Buddhas, received and kept the Buddha wisdom, and revealed it to living beings, leading them to enter into it. Do you all, again and again, draw nigh and revere them? For what reason? Because if Shravakas, Pratyeka Buddhas, and Bodhisattvas are able to accept and understand the law of the sutra taught by these 16 Bodhisattvas and receive and keep it without spoiling it, all those people will attain the Tathagata wisdom of perfect enlightenment." The Buddha addressed all the bhikshus, saying, "These 16 bodhisattvas ever take delight in teaching this sutra of the Lotus Dharma of the Wonderful Law. The 600 myriad kodas of Nayutas of living beings, like the sands of the Ganges, whom each of these bodhisattvas converted, born generation by generation, all following these bodhisattvas, heard the law from them and all accepted and discerned it. For this cause, they succeeded in meeting four myriad kodas of Buddhas, world-honored ones, and at the present time have not ceased to do so. So this goes. This also points over and over again to something I've said before. If you meet everyone that you meet or encounter or just are in the vicinity of, in your mind, see their potential Buddha-ness, then these are Buddhas that you're communicating with, being around. With that kind of an attitude and intent, be ready to assist, then you radiate out Buddha-ness. You cannot fail to touch the lives of everyone, not only that you encounter, but that are in your environs. Bhikshus and bhikshunis, I tell you now, that Buddha's disciples, the 16 Shramaneras, have all attained perfect enlightenment, Anuttara Samyak Sambuddhaye, even though we're still calling them bodhisattvas, right? Because they're here, they're physical beings. Buddha, Buddha-ness, is in the mind. It's not a thing you can grab out of the air. It's not a thing that I can grab a bunch of and hand you. It's something you must accomplish in your mind. It's not a thing. It's a state of being. And in all countries, in every direction at the present time, are teaching the law and have infinite 100,000 myriad kodas of bodhisattvas and shravakas as their followers. Two of those shramaneras became Buddhas in the eastern quarter, one named Akshobha, remember the king Akshobha, in the kingdom of joy, the other named Sumeru Peak. Of the two Buddhas in the southeastern quarter, one is named Lion Voice, the other one Lion and Sign. Of the two Buddhas in the southern quarter, one is named Space Dweller and the other Eternal Extinction. Of the two Buddhas in the southwestern quarter, one is named Imperial and Sign and the other Brahma and Sign. Of the two Buddhas in the western quarter, one is named Amita, and the other, he who passed, who has passed through all the sufferings of the world. He gets a long name. Remember, there's 16 of them. Of the two Buddhas in the northwestern quarter, one is named Tamalapatra, spiritually pervading sandal odor. The other, Sumeru Sign. Of the two Buddhas in the northern quarter, one is named Sovereign Cloud and the other named Sovereign Cloud King, and the Buddha in the northeastern quarter is named Destroyer of All the World's Fear. And the 16th is me, I myself, Shakyamuni Buddha, who have accomplished perfect enlightenment in the Saha domain. So I knew this sounded kind of autobiographical, didn't it? And there it is. He's identifying himself as being one of the 16 sons of this story, this storied Buddha. Basically, he's saying, this is how Tathagata wisdom came upon me, right? Bhikshus and bhikshunis, when we were shramaneras, each of us taught and converted infinite 100,000 millions kodas of living beings, numerous as the sands of the Ganges, and those who heard the law from me attained perfect enlightenment. Amongst these living beings, down to the present, there are some who still remain in the stage of shravaka. I constantly instruct them in perfect enlightenment so that all these people will, through this law, gradually enter the way of Buddhahood. But they haven't done so far, so I'm having to really with this ultimate teaching, put the law down, so to speak, right? Stop pussyfooting around. Do it. Do it now. For what reason? Because the Tathagata wisdom is hard to accept and hard to understand. All those living beings, innumerable as the sands of the Ganges, whom I converted at that time are you, yourselves, bhikshus, and will be my Sravaka disciples in future worlds after my extinction. You will continue to do what you do once I'm gone. But you must accept and understand that Buddha is just waiting for you to awaken it. It's already what you are, what you're capable of. I believe this is why the Lankavatara was written. Stop spending so much time adhered to words and phrases and start thinking about what those words and phrases are talking about, the meaning for them, right? That's why we invented language, to have some way of corresponding meaning, understanding deeply the process of life. But then we got enthralled with language. Why not? Sramana, or samsara, right? Ooh, another thing to own. Vocabulary. Missing the point. Language isn't for language. Language is for communicating something not language. Anyway, continuing on. After my extinction, there will also be disciples of mine who, not hearing this sutra, nor knowing nor apprehending the course which bodhisattvas pursue, will by their own merits conceive the idea of extinction and enter what they think is nirvana. But in other domains, wherever they may go, I shall still be Buddha, though under different names. There will always be instantiations of Tathagata, as we all are. We limit ourselves by claiming an identity of I'm a great student. I'm a great Shravaka. I hear the words. They're magnificent. They're amazing. Well, I can't ever get there. Why do we make that decision? If it's not cultural or endemic and pounded into our heads constantly, why can't we just put that aside and say, I'm going to enliven my Buddhahood now. Namo myo renge kyo. These people, though they conceive the idea of extinction and enter what they call nirvana, yet in those lands will seek after the Buddha wisdom and succeed in hearing this sutra. Only by the Buddha vehicle will they attain real extinction. Real nirvana. There is no other vehicle except the tactful teachings of the Tathagata, bhikshus. If the Tathagata himself knows that the time of nirvana has arrived and the assembly is pure, firm in resolve and discernment, penetrated with the law of the empty, profound in meditation, then he will gather together all bodhisattvas, shravakas, to teach this sutra to them. In the world, there is no second vehicle to attain extinction. There is only the one Buddha vehicle for attaining extinction, complete and perfect enlightenment. Know, bhikshus and bhikshunis, the tact, skillful means or expedient devices, of the Tathagata reaches deeply into the natures of all beings and knows that they are bent on the pleasures of trifling things and deeply attached to the five desires, skandhas. Or some of you may know the skandhas as the five aggregates, same thing. For the sake of these, he teaches an interim nirvana. I make a note here. This is the false nirvana of freedom from the skandhas rather than the full extinction defined as true nirvana. You see the difference, right? If they hear it, they will receive and take resolve in it. So now I have a larger note. This is the turning point of the semblance or counterfeit Dharma. This is employed by the Buddha as an expedient device to inspire the monks to continue on their journey on the path to enlightenment. Unfortunately, these monks take the respite as a validation for their egotistical accomplishment as the end goal of their practice. No, this is a rest period. No, I see where all this hard work is taking me. This makes it easy for them to maintain their fundamental attachment to this physical body as a vessel for the ego, soul, etc., whatever you want to call it. Identity. Full extinction comes of liberation from all eight consciousnesses and ideas of a bodily self. Buddhahood is the goal achievable in this life, but for this false nirvana, the goal of Buddhahood would be pushed into some fantasy of future lifetimes, reincarnations, or special places like Amida's Pure Land as other than here and now. Right? I say it again. Nichiren railed against the Nembutsu chanting Amida Buddha's name because they were all tacitly accepting that enlightenment, the Pure Land, whatever, cannot occur in this lifetime. It must be in future lifetimes. Or at very least, after this death, meet Amida and be taken to his Pure Land. That's religious thinking. That's magical thinking. It's nonsense. It's not Buddhism. Buddhism has always been about this life and living it to the full. That's what Siddhartha set out to do. This following parable illustrates the intended goal of this false nirvana or interim nirvana. To offer those who had been practicing for decades a respite on their path to relieve their doubts and weariness, to re-energize them to continue the path to the final goal of Buddhahood quickly in this lifetime. So here we go, the parable. And where are we time-wise? Yeah, we can get into it. Suppose there is a fearful region, 500 yohanas in extent, through which lies a perilous and difficult road. Now remember, our yohana is thought to be about 8 miles. So 500 times 8 miles, that's a long distance, right? Especially if you don't own a Tesla. And so there's this perilous and difficult road that you have to take to get there. Far from the abodes of men. Suppose there's a large company wishing to pass along that road to the place of jewels. And they have a guide, wise and astute, who knows well the perilous road, where it is open and where closed, and who leads the company that wish to cross this arduous region. So this is either a Bodhisattva Mahasattva, somebody like one of the 16 sons, or an actual Buddha. Suppose the company he leads become tired on the way, and they say to the leader, "We are utterly exhausted, and moreover, we're getting afraid and cannot go any further. I don't care how wonderful this goal of Buddhahood is. I'm perfectly happy being a Saraka or Pratigabuddha or just plain old Bodhisattva. I can teach this." The road before us stretches far. We got a long way to go yet. Let us turn back. The leader, a man of much tact, reflects thus. These people are really to be pitied. Can't you muster the will? It's not that much further. Surely the goal, even if you haven't experienced it yet, you can justify the ardor of getting there. How can they give up such a great treasure and want to turn back? He thinks to himself. Reflecting thus by a device, in the midst of the perilous road, he conjures a city over 300 johannas in extent, and says to the company, "Don't fear, and do not turn back. Stay on your march toward Buddhahood. In the meantime, here is this great city in which you may rest and follow your own desires. Go ahead, pleasure yourself. If you enter this city, you will speedily be at rest, and if you then are able to go forward to the place of jewels, you proceed." Okay, here's a campground. Rest up, drink plenty of water, eat some of the fine foods, get a good night's sleep, and in the morning, we'll be re-energized when we go. Thereupon, the exhausted company greatly rejoice in their minds, and praise their unexampled fortune. "Now, indeed, we escaped this deluded and malicious way. Let us speedily be at ease." Then the company proceed into the conjured city, imagining that they have arrived at their destination. That's the false nirvana, right? The intermediate nirvana. "And are settled in comfort." Ah, we achieved something. Yes, I'll have a pina colada. Well, no. When the leader perceives that the company are rested and are no longer fatigued, he makes the conjured city disappear. People who were laying in Shay's lounge are now laying on the desert ground. And he says to the company, "Come along, all of you. The place of jewels is at hand. I only created this past large city for you to rest in. But now that you're rested, don't you think we can go the rest of the way? Get to the goal?" Bhikshus, so it is with the Tathagata. At present, he is your great leader, acquainted with all the distresses and deluded and malicious, the perils and the long-continued process of mortality, from which you must be rid and removed. So interesting, the word Tathagata here being used as not only as it is embodied in Shakyamuni Buddha, but also that ninth consciousness is in all of us. So that little voice in the back of your head goes, "Yeah, I'll always regret it if I don't go all the way." "If living beings only hear of one Buddha vehicle, they will not desire to see the Buddha nor wish to approach him, but think thus, the Buddha way is long and far. Only after a long suffering of arduous labor can the end be reached. The Buddha, knowing that their minds are feeble and low, by his tact, when they are on the way to give them rest, teaches the two stages of nirvana. If those beings dwell in these two stages, then the Tathagata proceeds to tell them, you are not yet accomplished your task. The place where you are dwelling is near the Buddha wisdom. Take note and ponder that the nirvana which you have attained is not the real one. It is only that the Tathagata, through his tactfulness, expedient devices, in the one Buddha vehicle discriminates and speaks of three. It is just as when that leader, in order to give rest to his company, conjured a great city, and after they are rested, informs them, saying, the place of jewels is at hand. This city is not real, but only my conjured production. I have a little note here. Now Shakyamuni makes absolutely clear that this false nirvana was indeed a simple device to inspire further effort, and not a final outcome of Buddhist practice. At that time, the world-honored one, desiring to proclaim this teaching over again, spoke thus in verse. The Buddha, universal surpassing wisdom, for 10 kalpas, sat on the wisdom throne. The Buddha law still unrevealed, still unaccomplished, the Buddha way. Heavenly universal realms of influence and dragons, kings, asuras and other beings, all the realms, constantly rain celestial flowers to pay homage to that Buddha. The universal realms of influence beat their celestial drums and made all kinds of music. Fragrant breezes sweep away the faded flowers while raining others of fresh beauty. There's a repetition here, you hear, right? When 10 minor kalpas had passed, then he accomplished the Buddha way. Universal realms of influence and men in the world all were ecstatic in mind. The 16 sons of that Buddha, all with their followers, thousands of myriads of Kodas around them, all went to the Buddha, bending low at the Buddha's feet. They begged him to roll the law wheel. Revered lion, with reign of the law, fill us all and all the others. Hard it is to meet a world-honored one. Right, an instantiation, a human instantiation of Tathagata, Buddha. He appears but once in long ages, and then to awaken the living, he shakes all things. Rattles you loose, right? You ever do that to somebody? Hey, come to, right? In the worlds of the eastern quarter, 500 myriad kodas of domains, Brahma palaces shone with light such as never was before. All the Brahmas, seeing this sign, sought till they reached the Buddha. They honored him, strewing flowers, and offered him their palaces, entreating him to roll the law wheel and extolling him in verse. The Buddha, knowing the time had not yet come, received their entreaty, but sat in silence. From three other quarters and four directions, the zenith, the nadir, they likewise came, strewing flowers, offering their palaces, and begging the Buddha to roll the law wheel. Hard it is to meet a world-honored one. Be pleased in your great compassion, widely open the gates of the sweet dew, and roll the supreme law wheel, the world-honored one of infinite wisdom, receiving the entreaty of that throng, proclaim for them the various laws of the Four Noble Truths and the 12 Causes. Ignorance unto age and death all exist because of birth. All such distresses as these, all of you must know. While this law was being proclaimed, 600 myriad kodas of nayutas of beings ended all their distresses and all became arhats, but they hadn't let go of their bodies yet, yeah? The second time he taught the law, thousands of myriads of sons of the Gandhis, not following ordinary methods, also became arhats. From that time forth, the way attainers were incalculable in number. To count them for myriad kodas of kalpas would not reach their end. Then the 16 royal sons who left home as shramaneras unintendedly entreated the Buddha. Proclaim the law of the great vehicle. We and our companies of followers would all accomplish the Buddha way. We would be like the world-honored one with wise and perfectly pure eyes. The Buddha, knowing his sons' mind and the doings of their former lives, or their former time, by countless reasonings and various parables taught the six paramitas. And the supernatural things discriminated the real law of the way of bodhisattva walks and taught this law flower Dharma Sutra in verses numerous as the sands of the Ganges. So at first, everyone's turning into arhats, right? Because that's the middle point, that respite. But now seeing the accomplishments of the students, his sons, Buddha, the Tathagata, in human form, Buddha sees that they're ready to learn the ultimate goal of practice, the Dharma of the Lotus. When the Buddha had taught the sutra, in a quiet room he entered meditation. With concentrated mind, he sat in one place for 84,000 kalpas, a long time. All those Shramanetas, perceiving he would not let yet emerge from meditation, to infinite codas of beings expounded the Buddha's wisdom, each sitting on a law throne teaching this great vehicle sutra. So while the Buddha waited, they took the Lotus Sutra and took on their own the impetus to go out and teach it to countless people, everyone they met. They were doing the work of a Lotus Sutra Bodhisattva. And after the Buddha's rest, proclaimed and aided his teaching of the law. The number of living emancipated by each of those Shramaneras was 600 myriad kodas of beings, as many as the sands of the Ganges. They touched a lot of people's minds, yeah? After that Buddha was extinct, those hearers of the law in every one of the Buddha lands were reborn along with their teachers. They became enlightened right along with their teachers, right? These 16 Shramanetas, perfectly practicing the Buddha way, now dwell in the 10 directions, each having attained perfect enlightenment. Those who then heard the law all dwell with the Buddhas. Those who still remain, Shravakas, are gradually taught in the Buddha way. I was amongst the 16 and formerly taught to you. Therefore, by my tactfulness, I lead you on to the Buddha wisdom. Because of this former connection, I now teach the Law Flower Dharma Sutra to cause you to enter the Buddha way. Be careful not to harbor fear. Suppose there be a perilous way, cut off and full of venomous beasts, without either water or grass, a region of terror to men. An innumerable multitude, thousands of myriads, wish to pass along this perilous way, a road indeed far-reaching, through 500 yohanas. Then appears a leader of strong sense and wise, clear-headed and resolute mind, who in peril saves from all danger. But those people all become exhausted, and speaking to the leader, they say, "We're now weary and worn and want to turn back from here." The leader reflects thus, "These fellows are much to be pitied. How can they want to turn back and miss such great treasure?" At that instant, he thinks of a device. "Let me exert supernatural power and make a great conjured city, splendidly adorned with houses, surrounded with gardens and groves, streamlets and bathing pools, massive gates and lofty towers, full of both men and women." Having made this transformation, he pacifies them, saying, "Do not fear. Enter all of you into this city and let each enjoy himself at will." When those people had entered the city, their hearts were full of joy. They forgot all about them being weary and worn. Although only of rest and ease, and considered they had been emancipated. "Well, this is it. This is what all our hard work has been for." No. When the leader knew that they were rested, he assembled and addressed them, saying, "Let all of you push forward. This was only an illusory city. Seeing you all worn out and wanting to turn back midway, I therefore, by a device, temporarily made this city. Do you now diligently advance together to the place of jewels? I, too, in like manner, am the leader of all beings." Seeing the seekers of the way midway becoming wearied and unable to cross the perilous ways of mortality and earthly cares, so I, by my tactful powers, for their relief, taught nirvana, saying, "Your sufferings are ended. You have finished your work. When I knew you had reached nirvana and all become arhats, then I gathered you all together and taught you the real law. Buddhas, by their tactful powers, separately teach the three vehicles. But there is only one, the one Buddha vehicle. It is for the resting place that two are taught." Now I teach you the truth. What you have reached is not the real extinction. For the sake of obtaining the Buddha's perfect knowledge, Myoho Renge Kyo, exert yourselves with the utmost zeal. Double down. Let's go. When you have proved the perfect knowledge, the 10 powers, and so on, of the Buddha laws, and perfected the 32 signs, then that is real extinction. The Buddhas, the leaders, for the sake of giving rest, call it nirvana. But perceiving this rest should be ended, they lead them on into Buddha wisdom. So it's a very important chapter, isn't it? I have a note at the end here. We'll finish with that. Yeah, that'll be enough for today. Next chapter, chapter 8, 500 disciples receive predictions of Anuttara Samyak Sambodaya. 500 at a time so far. All right, so what I wrote at the end here is no doubt Nichiren read this as one example of Shoju teaching, appropriate for the time and capacity of the people. Further evidence that the time of the latter day or the latter age or Japanese Mapo would be a time of great turmoil and delusion that would require a firm hand and direct teaching to contravene the delusions of the lesser teachings adhered to by those Buddhists of lesser vehicles, let alone divergent religious pollutions of Buddhist teachings, yeah? All right. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being here. We'll get into the next chapter in the next video. In the meantime, much gratitude for all of those who are able, either supporting just by clicking the like button and subscribing. That's the Bodhisattva Act. It helps expand our Sangha. Those of you who have bought and continue to buy the ebooks or print books or mandalas, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you. Thank you so much. And patrons who are monthly giving us some much needed financial support. You guys are awesome, right? Universally worthy bodhisattvas, all of you. So stay committed, stay strong in your practice, and of course, to do all of that, please take care of your health, okay? And I will see you in the next one. Bye for now.